Rightio, welcome to episode number 16 of the Inside Running Podcast. We're starting to grow up a bit, boys. 16, getting into the real big numbers. How are we going?
Good, mate. Yeah,
travelling well.
That's good, good. Two chirpy responses. That must mean good news at both ends, eh?
Nice busy day in the store. Gets me up and about.
I'm sure it does. You were a bit quiet on the Facebook messenger today. Didn't get much from you.
Couldn't even get my computer out. Couldn't even sit out the back. Just flat knacker.
What, sales are up or is something happening in the shop?
No, it's just a bit about. A lot of people coming in, phone calls, organising new products. It's been fun.
Sounds good. Brad, you had a bit of a sigh there. What's going on? Have the prayers worked?
Body's better than it was this time last week. So everything's back on track. Just had a little speed hump.
Just a little speed hump and we're back on 214 shape.
Never was in 214 shape and never will be in 214 shape.
Oh, yeah. So tell us how last week went because your mileage was quite small.
Yeah, so Monday, so I came off that really big long run with a hard 10K at the end and, I remember saying to a few people, it's like, oh, I've done them. You know, I'm definitely going to get to the start line of this one. And then just went out for 50 minutes on Monday afternoon and everything felt fine. And then Tuesday morning I put the shoes on and sort of stretched my calf and noticed my tip post was a bit sore. And I probably should have stopped after about 10 minutes, but often I can run through tip post pain. So anyway, I ran 15-odd K on the Tuesday, but it was pretty sore afterwards, and all day walking around, I could feel it. So spoke to my coach, and I guess at this point, there wasn't a lot to be gained by trying to run through it. So he said to have, 2 days complete rest, which isn't ideal. It was scheduled to be a really light week anyway. So I had then Wednesday and Thursday completely off. Just took heaps of anti-inflams, ice, bit of massage. I did get some treatment on Thursday night and then tested it on Friday morning. I got through 50 minutes and I could feel it a little bit, but it was heaps better than Tuesday and it wasn't really sore once I stopped running. And then at that point, because I was going to Albury on the weekend and I was chatting to my coach and he didn't want me to race Albury at all. But then I said, look, my accommodation's already booked and paid for. So he said, all right, well, if you can get through Friday, Saturday, just go down and do it sort of as a tempo. So I got through the Friday, 50 minutes. Saturday morning went out for 45 minutes and then just did 6 30-second sort of efforts at the end of it and still no pain. So we went down to Albury and did city to city fun run. So finished second and ran 31:45. Didn't feel amazing. I'd almost compare it to, I don't know if you remember, about maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, I had that week where I just jogged, just did a 120K, no sessions. Yeah. And by the end of that week, I felt pretty lousy. And it was pretty similar on Sunday. Like I felt strong enough that, you know, I could keep going, but heart rate was high and just bit heavy through my quads. So Julian's boy, Charlie, towed me up and it was actually pretty good because he went out pretty hard and it sort of made, like, I'm not one to really go into races and not give it absolutely everything, but when he went through the first K in like under 3 minutes, it was like, well, it made the decision very easy to not even bother chasing him. So, but I got through it with no pain. So it was only 74.5K for the week. So it'd be my lowest week since I had the cortisone before Berlin.
Mm.
Yeah. So it wasn't planned, I guess, to be that low. And yeah, I had a few sessions in there which I didn't end up doing, but body's in one piece now and we've just changed things around a little bit this week. So originally I was going to go about 100 and probably 10K last week and then maybe 120 this week, but I'm actually going to go a little bit harder of this. Well, not hard, but, you know, I'm going to do 2 hours tomorrow as a midweek long run because I haven't done a long run for like a week and a half. And, yeah, so it's just going to be a bit bigger than what I'd planned this week coming.
I like it. Julian couldn't get there, so he sent a representative up to Aubrey. Is that how that worked, Julian?
Yeah.
Dog Charlie did well. There's a bloke who's run 30.04 or something, so he's no slouch. It's okay to lose to a bloke that good. Just like Michael Roger when I went to Aubrey. He is now... I'm the happiest man in Australia seeing him run 14.04.
Yeah, he had a good weekend.
Yeah.
He broke the world record in the 1500 as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and Julian just gave him an extra 2 seconds as well. So Rogues will be loving you as well, Julian.
It's a lot of love between us now. I'm glad he came out and did that.
Yeah.
What was the race like, Brad? I did hear a whisper that you left before presentations, which is a bit of a dog move, in my opinion.
So the race itself, so Charlie cleared out and, yeah, pretty much had it won after a kilometre. I ran with a guy called Matt Robbie. I used to race against him on the track probably like 10 years ago. But then after probably 2.5K, I was on my own. And, I tried to keep my heart rate under control, but just towards the back end, it seemed to really get quite high. And the last 2Ks slightly uphill. Which my last 2K were, I think, close to my quickest, which that was encouraging that towards the end I was actually starting to feel not too bad. So I think I ran like 3:07 and 3:06 for the last 2K. And, yes, I didn't stay for presentation because decided to go and have breakfast instead and get back to Canberra. I hate travelling for races. I just like to get home. So, and you never know how long you're going to be hanging around at those things for. So no presentation for me, and but still get the check. They're going to post the check up to me. So
did you check before you left?
What's that?
Did you check about the check before you left?
Check the check.
No, I didn't actually. They emailed me that afternoon.
Oh, jeez, fuck you.
Risky.
Yeah, I know. I would say no presentation, no prize. That's how I would operate.
Yeah.
And you are a race director, aren't you?
That's how our race runs. Next best, fourth place, come up.
Yeah, right. So, but a good course and stuff, Brad, because it's an interesting fun run. It starts in Aubrey, goes to Wodonga, is that it?
Yeah. So
go across the bridge.
So you run down the main street of Aubrey and then you run into a park which is a little bit windy for the first probably between 1K and 2K or 2.5K, and then you jump back out onto the main road over the bridge, and then you go back into this sort of parkland area where I think they had like a dragon boat or water skiing sort of competition on at the time, and that's a bit gravelly through there. And then at about the 3.5K mark, you then jump back onto the main road, which is that's really good running for the next couple of K. And then you go off onto a bit more dirt, you go over this footbridge, and then you do a little lap around a pond, and then sort of up the hill into the main street of Wodonga. So, like, potentially it could be a really, really quick course, but there's a couple of those sections where you sort of wind, you go off the main road and you're on the gravel and you're sort of zigzagging through. That probably slows it down just a little bit. But Charlie's run was pretty quick on for that course.
What did he clock, coach?
30.50.
Ooh, happy with that one, Julian. Good hit out for him.
Charlie could have run 30 flat or 35 minutes. Who knows? He's pretty tough to pick. He goes through ons and some offs. Hopefully he's on a good roll of ons right now. He's some talent, though. That man will be... I wonder what happened. Like, he's so good on the roads, but he's hates the track. And he was telling me, like, all summer, oh, I just hate the track. Like, it's not me. I don't perform well on there. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. Maybe, like, it's your fitness. In my head, I'm like, oh, we'll get you fitter. You'll be right. And then he's come out and done this. And I thought, oh, wow, you are good on the road. So
yeah, it was a good run. Like it's there's only like 17 meters of elevation, but as I said, if they could have more of the straight freeway section, it could be a really quick race.
Yeah. Yeah, it did look a bit windy in spots, definitely, when I was looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. And because I reckon Biwa will be a lot like that long straight section from, must be about, what was it, about 4K, between 4 and 6.5. I reckon that's how sort of Biwa will be, nice sort of flat, straight roads. So, yeah.
Mm. How's the head, Brad? Like, you're okay, you're over this, it's just focus on the race now, get to the start line?
Yeah, I think actually having that down week about 5 weeks ago where I felt crap at the end of it has probably been a good thing, because I basically compare that to now, and 2 weeks after that I was running really well. So I was a little bit, you know, like I didn't get a lot of confidence from the weekend, considering I'd run like exact same time at the end of my long run the week before. And effort-wise was probably similar. Mind you, I guess at the end of my long run, I did put the 4%ers on, whereas Sunday I was just in the Zoom fly. So that should make, I guess, a little bit of a difference. But I had a pretty good session this morning, so I feel like things are back on track. And that's what I said to my coach. I just need to have one good run between now and Biwa just to, you know, get the head in a good space. And I think I had that this morning, and hopefully have another one on Friday. And that's pretty much it for me then.
Yep, nearly there. Julian, talk us through this week. How's that plantar fasciitis treating you?
All right, yeah, heaps better now. definitely struggling. Like when we spoke last, I think the day after we recorded was like the worst day that I had. And I was thinking, oh, well, this is no good. This is a real problem. So I received the night splint, which is like a boot, kind of like a moon boot that pulls your foot into dorsiflexion. So you're essentially have a stretched plantar fascia at all times, and you can't not stretch it. So I mean, you can't like pull it out of stretch. So when you're sleeping or when you're spending extended times like sitting, you constantly have a stretch. So it's designed for you to wake up a lot nicer, like without that real morning plantar fascia soreness, which is pretty nasty for a lot of people. So that's what I did. I wore that Tuesday night. Wednesday it started to feel better, so I thought, oh, I think I'm onto a good thing here. Wednesday was pretty bad, but then Thursday I started to feel heaps better. Wednesday afternoon at Run Club, I'm like, wow, it's gone away. And then Thursday, just heaps better. Friday, better. Saturday, barely felt it. And now it's like really on the up. So I reckon I'm past it. I'm past the worst of it, so it's been good.
Jeez, that was easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm like night splint. I've also been applying heat to it, like a wheat bag or a heat pack before I run, so it kind of gets, it warms up. That's been working well. I've been wearing Hoka for my easy runs, which really offloads the plantar fascia, so that's good. And stay out of spikes, obviously. Higher pitch shoes at work. So there's been some good changes made, and really that's all it needed is to me not be an idiot about it and actually respect it. And now it's starting to, the little things I've changed are starting to work out. So, yeah.
Come good. What about this session you knocked out Thursday, 4x800?
Thursday.
Pretty impressive.
4x800. Yeah, well, this was the session like that I've been building towards for about two months, I reckon. I think I might have mentioned that I was going to do this ages ago, and I've been progressing towards it. So like 400 with 600 float, and I did 6K worth. Then I did 600 with a 400 float. I did 5K worth. And now this one was 4K worth of 800 at about what I want my race pace to be. with 200 float at 38, which is 310 pace. So I think I ran 11:42 for 4K, and I was pretty flat out at the end, but I'm happy. Like, it went well. I felt good, and it's given me confidence for next week. So that was, that's the main session of the week. I will progress from there to the race, basically.
14:10. That's what pace you're aiming for. That those splits tell me, I reckon.
Well,
Nick Earle's.
I don't know.
You've seen Nick Earle. He's having a crack at you on Facebook, calling you out.
I haven't seen. No, yeah. I haven't seen this.
Yeah, yeah. Reckons you'll be no good after 3K at that kind of pace.
Good.
That's coming up next week, though, isn't it? That's coming around quick.
Yeah, that is. I know, but I'm ready for it, and I'm looking forward to it. 14:10. Yeah, I'll be happy. I'm very, very happy with that. If I run 14:10 through 3K and then drop off a little bit and run 14:18, I'll be happy with that too.
Yeah, the good thing about that is, like, those floats are hardly slowing down. Like 38, 38, you know, 38 and 37, like, you're still moving.
Yeah, it's 3:10 pace. Like, it's not often you'd float at 3:10 pace. So it's not a rest, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Having a crack at my rest last week, no rest this week.
And then what did you finish off the weekend, session Saturday?
Not particularly. I ran with Dolce. I wanted to get in some work, but I was that Thursday night really took it out of me. Like, it's a tough session. Have to respect that, like, an effort that hard. So I ran, we ran two by 10 minutes on at about 3:17 or something. And then 10 minutes at about 3:45. So we just did some below threshold. Oh, well, around for Dolce, it was quite a good session, like below threshold, above threshold type work, 40 minutes worth. And I got to tick the legs over. And in the end, I was bloody working. So I actually averaged 160 heart rate, which was a bit higher than I expected for that session. And like, I felt like I got a pretty good run in. And then I ran 30K on Sunday with the group mainly. That was definitely fun. So enjoying having a Sunday group again. Skillsy, all good. No more cancer, so he's back training a lot. Coles was there. Dolts for a bit. And we had big Matty Freeman, local cyclist, throwing his weight around out there.
Well, just rocks up for a 30K run.
He did 16 of it.
Oh, yeah.
But he did well to keep up. Like he's been doing a bit of running. He's good value.
That's good. Good week. All on track.
Yeah.
My week was pretty easy. 3 runs for me. I think I had a week of 24K, which is pretty small for me. Post marathon, just an easy 30 minutes on Thursday, 25 minutes on Friday, and then hour and 10 minutes on Sunday. So that's all for me. Feeling good, though, but just really respecting the marathon and, slowly getting back into things this week. So not much to report on my front. Made the most of going to the pub on a Friday night, not having to worry about doing a session the next day. So I always think that's important post-marathon, to socialise a bit and get out there with some people that support you regularly. So, that was good fun, getting home at 1:30 or something like that. A bit of a big night, but, good fun. Hey, let's get on.
So, what's next, Brady?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Brad, blank canvas at this stage. Well, obviously Berlin in September, but not putting anything in yet. You know what? That could be a moose on the loose topic for me one week. Some people that were messaging me like an hour after I'd finished Nobioka Marathon, like, good work, mate, what's next? You're like, are you kidding me? I hate that question post-marathon, but now a week on, it's fine. But I hate when people kind of jump to that. They want to move on and not kind of be in the moment for a while. So, I won't make any decisions for 2 or 3 weeks and then start looking around and go from there. But, nothing in the immediate future, that's for sure. What about you boys? Do you like that when you – or do you have to set a goal straight up to kind of refocus?
I kind of plan what's going on from a while out. Like, I know, like, once I finish one race, what the next one is and then what I want to do later on. So it's kind of – I've always know what's going on.
But just A races, or will you have like mini ones in between?
Yeah, yeah, but I won't care about them. They'll just come and go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like Berlin's the refocus, but in saying that, there'll be some half marathons and 10Ks and all that stuff in between. And it's kind of good knocking that over like mid-Feb because I've still got a lot of time to jump into maybe some track stuff if I really want to. And then the kind of autumn fun run kind of scene, like Canberra's around and Great Ocean Road and jump in some halves or some, you know, 10Ks or something in those kind of races.
I think it's good to have, I don't know, maybe a rough idea what you want to do after a marathon, but I think you don't want to, I guess you don't want to look too far ahead, and often things change depending on what happens in the marathon. Like you look at Julian, for example, he had already locked in Tokyo before Berlin and then, you know, exceeded his expectations in Berlin, so then decided to can Tokyo. So it's good to have, I guess, rough plans, but I'm very similar. Like if I run well in BWA, I probably won't be looking for a marathon anytime soon. Whereas if I don't run well there, then I probably would look for another one.
Makes sense. Yeah, no, it certainly does. And I think sometimes as well, just seeing how your body feels. Like my body feels so much better than it did post my other three marathons. So kind of taking that into account. But still respecting it as well, though, like not getting ahead of myself too early. So just give it 2 weeks and then see what happens. Hey, big weekend, huge weekend of running news. Do you want to start with the Australian Track and Field Championships, which also doubled as the Commonwealth Games selection trials?
Sure thing. Yeah. It was a good week. It was awesome.
Man, every time I turned on the live stream, I only watched the distance stuff really, the 5 on the Thursday, the heats of the 8, the 1500s, and every time I turned on the live stream to watch one of those distance events, they were just, good. The hype was there. Disappointed there weren't too many people in the crowd. It kind of didn't look good running in front of an empty stadium. But, the athletes turned it on, didn't they?
I think there was a lot of construction still going on. Like those stands out the back, I'm not sure whether they were even open. So
yeah, I don't think people were even able to sit there if they wanted to be honest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you couldn't see what was in the home straight because that's where the camera was shooting from.
Yeah, so it's a bit... I mean, I still heard there weren't many there, but... it's not as bad as we think it was, as it looked.
What'd you like about it? Let's start with 5K Thursday night. This was an interesting race.
This is a bizarre race for me. Like
your mate.
Well,
the great Pat Tiernan.
So Pat Tiernan goes to the front, and this is a man with an A qualifier, so needs to come pretty much first to third to get it, to guarantee his spot. That'll basically get him his spot. Doesn't necessarily have to win. And if he wins, I mean, obviously it helps, but it's better for him if it's a slow time, given there's only like a couple of the other candidates don't have A qualifiers. So I was very surprised when he went to the front and just started dropping 64 after 64, because in my mind, I'm like, he's just dragging a few blokes around to basically be a competitor to him if this race gets won quickly. Like Dave McNeil ain't running 13:19 on his own. He needed Pat there. That's a surety. He needed Pat to run that time. And if he came second or third in 13:40, he'll go if he had a B, but if he had it's just a bit confusing as to why Pat did it, I think. I'm not sure what you guys think about that. Like, I thought that he could have probably put in a hard effort maybe halfway but made sure that no one else was getting an A that night.
Confusing, but I loved it. Like, when he just started rolling off 64s and then 64s, I was like, all right, we're in for a good show here. So for the spectator at home, it was really good to watch because it got to that stage where he had to, you keep turning out 64s, but they haven't dropped off. So all of a sudden you're a sitting duck and you've become their pacemaker. Like I'm sure he probably didn't expect that they'd be able to hang on, and he kind of maybe was thinking he'd just run away with it.
Yeah. Dave McNeil owes that bloke slabs on slabs.
I said that. Robbo and I were tweeting straight after and I said that exact thing. And so does Morgan McDonald, who won it. We can't, yeah, we haven't even mentioned him yet. What a run. Like, looked like he was dropping off there, got back on at one stage, and then closed in a 53. Like, he smashed it out of the ballpark that last 250 metres.
56, I think.
56, yeah, sorry, I'm talking, yeah, Mo Farah on a closing time with 53s. But, he was, he could win another gold medal. I'm calling these gold medalists on this show every week. Like, not too many guys will be able to close in 56 off that kind of, because they're out there running, you know, 13:25 pace at that stage, and then he's closed at that quick. It's not like they were jogging at 13:50 pace.
Yeah, no, that was really impressive. I loved watching it. Just odd. Odd race.
Brad, what do you reckon?
My 2 cents worth. I reckon maybe Pat doesn't back his kick that much. Like, especially after what happened at Zatopek, and you had guys in the field like Stewie McSween who outkicked him at Zatopek, McNeil, who's got a big kick, McEntee, who, you know, is a good 1500 guy. So maybe that was his tactic, was to try and just run those guys off their feet. The other one is, which I'm not sure if there's any truth, like, there's probably no truth to this, but you never know with, because he's obviously not coached by Badeau, but he's part of Badeau's sort of network. And it almost seems like they try and qualify as many guys as they can. And Pat's already in the 10K. So, like, from a spectator's point of view, it almost looked like he was setting it up for his teammates, even though they're not teammates, if that makes sense.
To sacrifice his spot.
He's already qualified for the 10, and he's probably a better 10K. Like, he probably prefers the 10 than the 5. Actually, I think he said that somewhere, that he prefers the 10 to the 5. So that's how it sometimes feels with Badeau's guys, is that it's they try and get as many of them qualified as possible. So they all have a run.
That's the case. I don't think so.
Yeah, but it did look that way, didn't it?
It did. I thought the same. And I, like, after the race, I thought, oh, shit, like, what a sacrifice. Like, what a teammate.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was like that.
No.
The depth, though, to have three guys go under 13:20 in that, like, humidity was, like, at 85 or something, I think I read somewhere. Like, that's huge. When these guys go to Europe and get in loaded fields, that doesn't often happen.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite a bit of competitive, Al. Like, that's what racing brings out, though. Like, and the spot to go into the Com Games, like, is a bit more on the line.
Yeah. This is a side note, but I wish they all didn't wear the same singlets, just so we could kind of just look a bit different out there. It was good that Morgan McDonald was wearing a white singlet, his United States University kit, but I don't know, I'm getting a bit sick of seeing those tie-dye Nike singlets on everyone. It makes it not good when you're watching on the live stream and can't distinguish between the difference.
Yeah, we. I think we're due for a new one soon, surely. Nike. Yeah,
but then they all just get the new one and all change it.
You
can nearly pick the guys that don't get their contracts renewed because they stick to the ones a couple of years ago.
That's
a good thing.
I like that too. I like the guys like Jack Rainey, who wears the All Blacks.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go to the next event, the women's 5K. What'd you think, boys? We talked about the men's. What'd you reckon about this one? This was a good race too.
Yeah, impressive run by Celia. It's like she's just there's times during the race where you think that she's gone, and then down the home straight with maybe three laps to go, she'll like kick to just get back on, and the next lap you think she might be gone again, and then she kicks again, and it was very similar to how she did at the Zatopek as well. Just always manages to dig deep and find another gear when it's needed. So,
interesting. Yeah, compare her and Maddie Hills's Hills Heiner. She's Heiner now, isn't she? She was Hills.
She's Hills now. She was Heiner.
That's right. Correct. Interesting to compare their techniques. Like smooth, Maddie, you know, looks like she doesn't break stride at all. And then when Celia goes, it looks like she's sprinting away from robbing a bank. Like, she is tough as nails in that last lap.
She's a bulldog. She is a solid bulldog.
You can't call someone a bulldog.
Why not? That's like, No one's saying she looks graceful when she runs. She looks like a bulldog when she runs. And it's worked for her. Just like
tough as nails.
Holds on. And then, you know, what bulldogs are bred for. They're bull for, like, they were built, bred to hold on to a bull's nose for as long as possible. And that's what she does. She just holds on, and then she just wins at the end.
Mm.
Yeah. Bulldog.
Nice analogy. I like it.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Eloise?
Yeah, spot's in trouble, isn't
Marathon.
It?
Well, sort of like, you know, is that a peck? She, you know, wasn't great. You think, but you go, oh, well, you know, it's sort of start of her season. She's probably had a bit of an off season.
I don't think that's an excuse, though, Brad. I think if you know the Commonwealth Games trials are in February, you readjust your seasons, don't you, to not have your off-season when the off-season usually is?
I thought that, maybe the 10K, she won't be in tip-top shape, but I definitely thought she'd be, you know, firing by now. But I don't know if she's had injury concerns or other priorities.
She wasn't far off it, really. She just lacked that spark, and that's maybe what happened. She's not like as young as these other girls anymore. She's obviously stronger, so that's why she's on the front pulling along. Yeah, I reckon if she went up a distance, it might, like, I mean, I want her to run a marathon.
Yeah, so do I.
I think it's like, jump in now. Now's the time.
You pick her for the team in that third spot, though, don't you, for the sake of just her experience at Rio and World Champs. And she's a big-time performer. Give her another 7 or 5 weeks or whatever it is. Like, yeah, that's a strong women's 5K team if you put all three of them in.
Yeah, it is.
It is, certainly. Men's 1500. Well, no, we'll go to the 800. The 800 was next to happen. And this has caused the selectors a few troubles. A final, which was pretty hard to make because only the first winners from each heat, I think, and maybe the next two fastest were getting through from pretty big fields. And then they had a B final, but the fastest time from the weekend come from the B final. Joseph Deng, did you watch it?
Yeah. I missed his final that I watched. No, I missed both, actually, but I saw a replay of the A final.
Wow, Phil, you're in on the B final. He pretty much did what Rhodesia did, just a couple of seconds slower at the London Olympics, just went bang from the gun and then just held on to like a fantastic time and no one got near him.
Yeah, it's really cool that someone's gone and done that. There's going to be two real looks at it from the public's point of view, I think. Like, A, that run there was worth a spot on the team. Like, he's run the world leading time. He's done it by himself. It shows that, like, he has the strength for it. I think he was second to Luke Matthews in the semi-final. Is that right?
The heat.
Like,
the reason he didn't make the final is because the Australian champion pipped him from, you know what I mean? Like, he drew an unlucky heat. So he's got a claim to an argument there as well.
That's right, yeah. And then, like, in the final, was Jeff Risley convincing enough to pick? And has he had enough? Yeah, like, the man's had a lot of cracks at it now. Like, do you bring up someone who's younger and give him a bit of a taste?
Yeah, because he's just a kid, isn't he? Like, 18, 19?
Yeah. I think he's a little older than that, but, like, do you blood someone? I reckon you do. I would pick him.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to blood someone who's got balls as well, and he's proved that he's got balls by just going, you know, if he gets in a final or semi-final and knows that he has to run from the gun, he can do it, and he can do it fast. So, he's the kind of guy you want on a team, don't you? You know when sometimes we go to major championships and you kind of wish the Aussies just went from the front and kind of made their mark a bit? Like, this is the guy who's going to do it.
Yeah, well, he's shown he can run fast. I guess it just depends on how strict the selectors play by the rules. Like, do you go? It's a tough call. I'll be interested to see what happens.
Isn't the rules, though, top two automatic if you've got an A or a B, and then the rest is selectors' discretion?
I don't know. That's what I thought, but I'm not exactly sure.
I think so.
I think if you've got a B, you have to win.
Yeah, but still, to compare Jeff Risley to Joseph Deng. They both got A qualifiers. One was in the B race, one was in the A. Yeah. One finished third in the A race, one finished first in the B.
Potentially all three of them will go.
Joshua Ralph's definitely in because he had the time and finished second. Yeah, so there's only one spot for two guys.
Yeah, yeah.
This bloke was born in 1998. How old does that make you feel?
Yeah. So, Luke, I think we haven't mentioned how dominant Luke Matthews was. That was an amazing run. Like, this guy's good and he's fit. I just hope he brings that confidence to a big meet and runs with some confidence out there. Because he's going to be something special. He's still only young too.
He's special isn't he? Like, the invincibility about him, like, I hope he brings back the mo. Like, we should try and get him on the show. I reckon he'd come on the show pretty easy if we banged him a tweet or something. He's just got a bit of that swagger about him. Just seems a bit authentic. Like, I reckon he could really do some good things for the sport and athletics in Australia.
Yeah, and I want to see him against the Kenyans, and whether he still runs with the same confidence that he does when he's like destroying his Australian teammates.
Yeah. So what have we spoke about? We spoke about the female 800. Man, that was a bit of an upset as well. Your pick from last week did a bit of similar tactics to Pat Tiernan, Julian.
I know. Like, I was thinking, wow, geez, she's gone off like a rocket. And then she went through in 59, and I thought, oh, I think you're fucked at here, Georgia. and she came third. She got past Brittany McGowan, just ran a smart race, just relaxed, stayed patient, kicked home. It was pretty experienced race, really. Good to watch.
And a fast time. That's like, I think Tamsin Lewis, or Manu's the only person that's gone quicker than that in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, very fast. And like, had someone to chase. She basically had a rabbit the entire way. Yeah. So that's how you run fast.
Yeah. No, it was good. I think with men's 1500, this was a bit of an anticlimax for me. I think everyone predicted Gregson to win pretty easy. He tried his hardest not to win it. He was in a bit of trouble until about 80 metres to go, and then just put everyone away in the last 50 metres.
Yeah, well, he got stuck. Like, he did not run a good race. He was lucky enough that he is so fast that he got away with it. But the way that he ran, like, you just worry that he gets himself into some spots sometimes. And that was not a good spot to be in. Like, 200 out, I thought, he's not going to make this team. Like, he's coming fifth. And these blokes are all fast in front of him. Every one of them can sprint. And then he gets to 100 to go. He's in lane bloody five. And he just showed his class. Like, he is a class above, just like Matthews was in the 800. But you just hope that he gets his tactics right when against the real big dogs.
Mm. Yeah, I think I read a statement somewhere online that you can't make those kind of mistakes against the kind of best in the world.
I think you made that statement. You didn't read that, you made it.
Mate, I'll copy and paste other people's statements and then I make those ones for myself.
And then you talk about it as if someone else made it.
I also read during the week that it's a nice statement though, isn't it? But if Kenya, yeah, I'm not sure who's Kenya sending out for the 1500s, but I'm not sure. Yeah, if they don't send too quicker guys, he probably can make those mistakes and still win it.
We'll see. Nick Wellis is there, Nick?
Yes. What I loved about the 15, though, was, like, in the last lap, there were so many different guys that looked like they were going to win. And even with 100 to go, there was a couple of guys there that didn't have A's but had B's, like James Hansen, that were potentially going to win. Like, because you had down the homes, at one point it looked like Sam McEntee was going to sort of, you know, run away with it. And then down the straight, you know, you had your Geordie Williams, you had James Hansen, Rory Hunter had a B and finished third. So, and it was just that, I guess, Gregson had that class over the last 30, 40 metres. So it was a great race to watch.
And women's 1500. I didn't catch this one, but anyone catch it live?
I didn't see it either, no.
Remind me who won.
Julian, did you catch this one live?
No, I haven't.
Lyndon Hall.
This was on like in the middle of the day or something, right?
Yeah, I missed that. I don't know when it was, but I missed it.
No,
as well.
It was Saturday night. I was in Albury. I didn't have much internet down there.
I was at a restaurant.
What do you mean internet in Albury? That's like a massive city.
No, my hotel. The internet was down at the hotel.
Is it? Anyway, no, I missed it. I haven't seen a replay of it either, actually.
Yeah, well, Lyndon Hall, class above the rest again. Like, just showed she just stepped away in that last 250 metres and, absolutely nailed it. Like, she's, I don't know, you look how well she ran that 5K and you put that strength of her 5K with her 1500 speed and she's, pretty invincible. So, exciting things to come from there as well.
Yeah.
I was proud of the sport, though, over the weekend. Like, I just felt every time I turned it on, it was good races.
Yeah.
No, it was fun to watch.
I'll just give a quick shout out to Sydney Uni boy James Nipperis in the steeple. So I used to teach James in Sydney, and he dug really deep in that last lap. I didn't think he was going to get over that last steeple. He looked pretty cooked. So because he only had a B, so he had to win the race. So good on him.
He's made another.
How old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah. I think Nipperis has been around since before I started running and used to teach.
You know I'm old.
I do.
That's why I'll be lucky to get around the course in BWA. I'm that old.
Go for the men's 40 plus record.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was good. The live stream was good too. Good too. Yeah. The live commentary was good, and they crossed to the interview straight away, and there was good camera work. I was I was impressed with that as well. He is after us just critiquing. We're on this dodgy little podcast, and we're just like giving our feedback about big live streams. But anyway, hey, other news for the week. Run the Bridge down in Tassie. See these results?
Yeah, I've seen them.
I liked them. Some quick times down there. I thought this event might struggle with everyone at Nationals and may have been an easy place to go pick up some prize money, but the fields were deep.
Yeah, a lot of the marathoners down there.
Start with the females. Lisa Waitman, probably run of the day, 32:41. A minute ahead of Charlotte Perdue in second, who's pretty well credentialed herself, the UK marathon runner. And then Andrea Sekafin, 33:44, so pretty close race for second and third. And then Ellie O'Kane, still called Ellie O'Kane on all these results, Julian. What's going on there?
I think she still enters. I don't know. You'll have to ask her that.
Yeah. She was a minute behind in fourth, in front of Miriam Dowie, who's she's just impressing every time she races, Miriam.
Yeah, no, it's a good field. They've sent him off 4 minutes in front of the guys. And Lisa beat Liam, I think.
Yeah.
For the trip home. So, it was pretty impressive. That's a great time down there. Like, pretty hilly little course. You know it. You did it last year.
Yeah, I did. It's hilly, but if you're strong, you can still run faster than it, I think. Like, if you play at the cards right, because you get some good downhill as well off it, but if you're strong enough to run the uphills well, I think you can still run fast on the second half. But if you're no good on hills, you're cooked. Like, they just bang you up too much and you got to recover on the downhills.
Yeah, pretty deep field in the men's, not very deep in the ladies. I don't know why that is.
Well, we could talk about this at Hobart, half marathon and marathon stuff the other day, but you chuck Virginia Maloney, who didn't start, and Millie Clark, who didn't start in there, and that's quite a deep field. But there two people that have just been selected for Australian teams, and DNS is next to their names.
Unsure what's going on. Are
alarm bells going off there, or do we know anything?
I don't know anything.
Don't know anything.
But actually, Ali got a blood test today because she's been feeling shit and she wasn't happy with her run, and she's severely anemic. So she ran that race and has been running the last few weeks feeling pretty average and now knows why. So, if you have a look, Virginia Maloney, Millie Clark, Ali, three chicks all going to international races who could potentially be injured or under the weather there. Especially you'd worry about Virginia Maloney. Like, hopefully she's not injured.
Jen's good. She listens every week. We'll see if we can get her on in a week or two and see what's happening. She'll be all right. Men's race out. Liam Adams first, 29.15. Wins every single race he runs down there. No surprises. Dejan Gebrselassie, 7 seconds behind in 29.22. And Brad Milosevic. Good run by Yugi, 29.24. The marathoner still proving he's got some speed.
Yeah. That's fast on those hills.
Mm. He's tough as nails, though, Yugi. Joel Tobin White come from triathlon background, 29.38. That's solid. Nick Earl, Julian's arch enemy for Melbourne Uni 5K, 29.47. And Kev Batt, also under 30 minutes, 29.56. It's deep. Yeah. That's real deep, isn't it? Like Hugh Williams in at 11th, 30.28. Like he had a blinder at Hobart half, so I think he might be a bit disappointed with that one. Pat Smith, I just had him on Tell Me Your Tales this week, 30.25. Been running 90k weeks, comes out and runs 30.25. He's unbelievable, that bloke. But yeah, a deep field. Like you think you're, 15th spot broke. That was Matt Hudson, who's a low 29 minute guy, and he comes 15th.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that result.
I think it says a lot about Tasmanian distance running, though, or the events down there. Like, for the size of Tasmania, you'd have to say that they put on probably some of the best events around the country. Run the bridge, Launceston, Burnie, the run up Mount Wellington, the half there. Like, they do look after their runners.
Hobart Marathon Festival, like that's a big event. They get some good people.
Yeah. Like they put on some good events, and I think they look after the elite guys really well. So, credit to Tassie distance running.
Yeah, can you imagine if every state put on 5 events like that?
Yeah, yep.
And I think it's good that the elite guys support it. Like, they obviously pay out a bit of prize money and give you a hotel room or some flights for some of those faster guys. So, yeah, it's good that people go down there and support them.
Yep.
Alrighty-o. Any other news, boys? I think we've covered everything, haven't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
Listen to the question. Keep moving?
No, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, yeah. Claire happy? Phillips. So.
Claire Phillips.
Claire's Ballarat girl.
You're a better reader than I am.
When looking to do double runs on one day, is there an ideal amount of time between the two? That's the question. It's a good question,
That's
too.
That's a good question.
I think it's a pretty straightforward answer. My answer to that is as long as possible. So, that'd be how I would answer that.
Question for you, getting off topic, but have you ever done your morning run in the same kit that you've done your afternoon run?
No.
Yeah, I've done that before, Brad. Get out.
You know what we call them?
Get out
in the Navy.
What do you call in the Navy?
Oh yeah. Tell us about your 1 week in the Navy again.
We call you guys bugs. Because you're stinky little bugs.
No, and I'm just saying you get out a bit late in the morning, and you might mow the lawns or something in the afternoon, so you don't want to when we get changed, and you might have a swim, and you're still in your running shorts, and then they dry out while you're mowing the lawns, and then you're just like, all right, it's time for the Arvo run. Just head out the door. School holidays.
Or you run. Or
you're
you
not
run
running
your,
with anybody.
You nah, run your morning running.
No
you run
run
your morning
there.
Running. You run in Canberra and it's -3 in the mornings. So you don't sweat at all.
Yeah, there's...
you stay in the same kit, not you take it off, go to work and put it back on again.
Oh,
like, you're in the same kit the whole day.
Nah, I've never done that. Sorry, Brady.
Come out a couple of times.
You stinky bastard. There's... Yeah, no, go. You answer it properly now.
Well, I generally always try and work on 6 hours. I don't know why, but I just think... 6 hours seems to be, a good amount of time. But as you said, as long as possible. But having said that, if I have a super early run the next morning, I don't want to leave that second run too late in the afternoon either.
Mm.
So, I generally don't run any closer than 6 hours together.
Mm. Yeah, I think it depends on, like, if you're doing that second run at easy pace, and I think she's asking this question, maybe, Julian, you might know if she's about to introduce this, but the second run is meant to be a super really easy run. Like, it's not meant to tire you out, excessively for the next morning. So if you're doing it pretty slow, it shouldn't impact the next day. It's probably more making sure the gap's right for that same day, which, if you've got a full-time job, it almost works perfectly. I always try to be home for my morning run at 7, and if I get out before 5 in the afternoon, that's pretty good going, so that's a nearly perfect gap for me.
Yeah, and the second run's more about recovery than stressing yourself anyway.
Yeah, just active recovery, isn't it? Isn't that the purpose, wise man?
Yeah, that's right. That's what we do. Yeah. So it shouldn't be a big deal, and you can put it closer together if you have to. So like 4 or 5 hours can be done. I remember like some people run 3 times a day. Well, they have in the past.
Yeah.
And that like, yeah.
People look at, you look at like Bordeaux's boys when they go to Falls Creek, like they often don't finish their morning run till probably like 11 o'clock because they don't start that early. And then they're out again at what, 4:30?
Nah, 5:30. 9 and 5:30 they do at Falls Creek.
Yeah, but they don't, so 11 till 5. I think I've seen some runs where they've gone earlier than 5:30.
Okay.
But, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, second question we put two in this week because they're two quick ones. When you guys are running, do you run with your phone or do you run with an iPod? Or when you're listening to podcasts or music or whatever you listen to, what are you using?
I never run with a phone, and I do often run with an iPod. I'll listen to the radio if they're just gonna play music. But if it's like, yeah, if it's breakfast talk radio, then I won't. Otherwise, I'll just listen to the songs that I have on my iPod.
Have you got one of those iPods that's got the radio function on it?
It's an old iPod. Yeah.
Well, mine's even older. I've got an old iPod. Same answer to you. Never run with my phone. But, download podcasts and music and stuff on my laptop, plug in the iPod, the old iPod Nano, and then put them on the iPod, and then, just run with that little one. Because if it gets sweaty or something, it doesn't matter because it's just like probably valued at $20 now, that iPod. So, whereas my phone, yeah, it's too big, and I'd stuff it up, I think.
Yeah.
Julian,
yeah,
what do you do?
I have an iPod Shuffle that I might use once a week. That, like, I just want the smallest thing that I can find. But now I'm looking for Bluetooth, like, wireless headphones. And there's no wireless in the Shuffle. So I need to find a new MP3 player. So I can get one of those cool Bose, like, these new Bose wireless headphones. I've got the Bose wired ones. They're really good. But I don't want cords. So if anyone knows any Bluetooth MP3 players that are nice and small, work with Apple, I would love some recommendations there.
Contact the show and see if they can donate some, and we'll do a review with it.
I'm happy to buy what I need. I'm not after free stuff all the time.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we could have worked something in there. Yeah, true. Do you listen to podcasts and stuff though, or you always just listen to music?
I never listen to music, actually.
Oh, it's all podcast. So you just shuffle on the podcast. You just got to keep hitting the shuffle until the podcast comes up.
No, I do one a run. So put it on, delete it, put another one on, delete it. I don't do a lot, though. Like, and if I go out, put on a podcast and I'm not enjoying it, I take it off. So I just unplug it. Tell me your tales. This is shit. Get it off.
tell me your tales, maybe. What are you talking about?
There's a few average ones in there, but get rid of them.
All the Road to Berlin ones, they're average, the ones that you feature on.
I've never listened to myself ever, run, like ever at all. I think it's embarrassing. I'm a moron. I don't know why anyone would want to listen to me, let alone myself.
People are messaging me now. They've just discovered the Road to Berlin ones after listening to Inside Running, and they've actually like untapped this like resource of 15 episodes. They're loving going back and listening to them for the first time.
Yeah, I reckon that's better than this one. Definitely.
Yeah, it still gets more downloads than this one, but it doesn't. This one's growing. Hey, Moose on the Loose, what do you got?
Oh yeah, this is gold. I had a couple of topics rolling through, but then last night changed it all. So my rant this week is about blokes who go into public toilets and jerk themselves off while other men stand around watching. That is a legitimate rant because it happened to me last night. I was out on a run along what we call the Yarrowee Trail. Actually, a lot of people call it the Yarrowee Trail. Everyone does. But we went out to the reservoir, Gongong Reservoir, And it's a pretty dodgy little spot. Like last week, we were running out there, me and Dolts, on a Monday night. I passed a bloke in his car, just sitting there looking in his mirror, aimed at the toilets. And I thought, oh, you're a dodgy bastard. And then ran past, sort of had a giggle to Dolty about it. So I was running along, needed a crap. Said to Jace, hey, if I yell out when I go in there, come in with a stick and start swinging. We had a laugh. I go in, turn the corner. One bloke just standing in the middle of the toilets, leather jacket, kind of like wispy hair with aviator sunners on. And he's like staring at me. And thought, like my initial reaction is, why is there a bloke in here not pissing or shitting, just standing there? Like, this is an odd thing to be doing in a toilet. And I take another step around the corner. Bloke, pants around his ankles, dick in his hand, didn't see it, which I'm very happy about, but gets a massive shock, pulls his pants up. I have a look at the other bloke, no reaction, like just totally content with what's going on. Turn around, kind of go, oh, like a disappointment that I couldn't go to the bathroom and that I had to see that, and walk out and get to talk about the story for the rest of my life. But you know what? We were running along later and I thought, that's fucked up. Like, imagine if that was a kid out there on a run. I know heaps of kids that go out and, like, little athletics kids go out and do runs out there. Imagine if that kid walked in to that. That's just sick. Like, and it's not sick because they're two blokes, like gay blokes. That's not the sick bit. I'm sure someone will get pissed off that, like, I'm having a go at gay people doing it. But it wouldn't matter if it was a chick doing it to another chick. It's not on out there. Or a guy doing it to a chick. Or a guy with two dicks doing it and people watching. You keep that shit for it at home. You don't need to do that in a public toilet. And it's a place that's visited by a lot of families. Like, it's fucking disgusting. It's a creepy thing to do. So yeah, rant. Good one, I reckon.
Use public toilets for their right purpose. That's a rant.
But that said, if there was a bloke with two dicks doing it, I would stay and watch too, because that would be amazing.
Let's move on. All right, that's it. The show's finishing on that note before we hook into the interview. Brad, you're getting ready to fly out this time next week. You'll be doing the last show before your race. What's going to happen between now and then?
So 2 hours tomorrow morning, which I said a couple of weeks ago that I had done my last two-hour midweek run, but with what happened last week, I'll add another one in. I've got 2x5K on Friday, just at sort of 1630 to 1640 pace. And then sort of a shorter long run on Saturday. And then next week's just maybe some 2-minuters early in the week, maybe like a 3K tempo on Wednesday, and just easy running. So not much to go, really.
You reckon you need 2 hours tomorrow?
Don't put doubt in his mind this late.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I'm not a big believer in a massive taper. Like, I've done some of my best sessions, like, when I've been in the middle of mileage. So, it's still 11 days before the race. I don't think 2 hours, 11 days before the race at 4:15 is going to hurt me. So,
yeah, Josh Harris would agree. He likes going in pretty heavy. Think if you
Look at our guest that's just about to come up. He ran a 200K week last week, and he's running Tokyo this weekend. So
yeah, let's see how he goes.
He also runs 250Ks every other week though. So it's when you put it into context like that, he's tapered.
That's an 80% week, isn't it? 80% yeah, on what he normally.
I'm only running 140 this week, so that's way less than my 190.
And you've kind of tapered the last week anyway, so you kind of got that freshness. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Julian, what are you doing? You're racing next Tuesday, yeah? Is that next week?
Yeah, yep, Tuesday next week. So I was supposed to do a session tonight. I'll do one tomorrow morning. Then I'll just tick along, skip my long run, and freshen up. No 2 hours for me this week.
Good. Get ready for that 14:10. This week's interview, Dave Cronitti. He 217 man, schooled us all at Berlin last year. does high mileage, good bloke, got some interesting stories, and he's been around the sport for a long time, so it was really good kind of talking to him about his time in ultras. And Brad, you did pick a couple of weeks ago that it looks like on his Strava that he doesn't own a car, and that's true, so he can't drive due to his eyesight, so he used running as a commute, that's why he logs so big miles. And yeah, it was really good to catch up with him and have a good chat, so I hope people enjoy that one. Before we go, we got him on, so a lot of people actually emailed in, so if you do have people that you want us to interview, feel free to bang us an email. No guarantees, especially if you've got a contact as well. Sometimes we get good suggestions, but it's actually hard to make contact with them. So don't just pick names out of the air and bang them through.
Can I just add there, Dave is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet as well. I remember running in Canberra, and at the time I was in front of him, but he's the only guy that I've ever met that was actually encouraging the guy that was in front of him. Like, it was bizarre, but like that's the type of guy he is. Just so nice. So
yeah, good.
Anyway, little story.
He mentioned both you boys in the interview too. How he was inspired by Brad and then inspired by Julian's negative split at Berlin.
He pantsed us. What is he doing looking at our
times? He went through the times, actually. If you go back and listen to it, he went through the times and only one man negative splitted more than him at Berlin, and that was by 1 second, and it was you.
Well, I'd still take his time over my time.
He ran strong that day. Last thing as well, we were getting a few emails about possibly starting a Strava group, which we did. I don't know a whole lot about Strava groups, but I've done some research and started one up. And 250 people joined the Strava group in the space of 24 hours. So if you're out there on Strava, feel free to join it. It's actually good to look through the feed of some of our listeners and just see what kind of sessions they're doing and whereabouts in the world they're running. So feel free to join that one. And I've got a few ideas coming up to make things a bit competitive on there. So that's all I'll say at this stage. But, thanks for tuning in again. Thanks for your time again, boys. Get to sleep, Brad. So you got this big 2 hours in the morning. And, good luck with that little niggle that's hopefully going away.
Yeah, all good now.
All right. See ya.
Over and out, boys.
Born to the river, a black blood in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say,
all right, Dave Cunitty, thanks for coming on the Inside Running Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. We really wanted to get you on because, you kind of towed all three of us up at Berlin last year. That was one reason, but we also wanted to get you on to kind of have a chat about your training and, you kind of do things a bit differently. So thanks for giving us some time.
Yeah, no problem, mate. Yeah, unconventional was a word I've just used on a thread on Strava just 2 minutes ago. Actually, it's funny you should say that.
Well, we might go there straight away. So I've just checked Strava about 10 minutes before we got on here, and you're 1 week out from the Tokyo Marathon, and you've just clocked up a 200k week. So where's the thinking come from that one?
Well, I guess the thinking is that I've been recovering really well from my sessions. I haven't been hammering out any long runs within that time. My last hard long run was about 3 weeks ago, where I did about 32 k's at race pace. And in the weeks following that, I've just been doing shorter, sharper stuff up to about 10 k's hard. Culminating with my last hard session was a 10 k around Parramatta Park on Friday. And I've found myself at 198 k's this morning, so I felt the need, OCD one in the end, to go out and punch out the other 2 k's just to get up to that magic 200.
Yeah. And for listeners that don't know, like you've run 57 it was at Berlin, just gone in 2017, and quite a breakthrough. Like you've been around the scene for a while, and your best was 220.55 before that, and then just really smashed it out of the park that special day in September in Berlin.
Yeah, correct. There was a few sort of false starts in the interim. That PB you mentioned, 220.55, dates back to 2011, and obviously I haven't been getting any younger, and there was a few years of injury there. I had few little things with my knee. I sort of came good actually in 2012, and this is a race that always plays on my mind. So I set the PB in 2011 at the Gold Coast, and 1 year later I just sort of ramped up the fitness sort of all of a sudden throughout sort of May and June, and I got to the Gold Coast and actually hadn't entered anything, and I had this big question mark, oh, do I do the half or do I do the full? And of course the half won out because I just hadn't I'd done as many long runs as I would have liked. And then I ended up running 107.12 or 13. And I thought, oh, geez, I wonder if I would have got under 220 if I'd gone the full. But, you know, you can't – once the decision's made, it's made. And then, of course, that was followed by a couple of years of injury. And it wasn't really till the end of 2014 that I had my next serious crack. And I got to Fukuoka, and I kind of knew in my heart of hearts that it wasn't going to happen that day, and I went out at 70 minutes and 6 seconds, and when I got to halfway in that time, I knew I wasn't going to negative split it, and I know I ended up holding on okay for a 2:22. And then, yeah, that again was followed by a couple of years of injuries, in which time I had some surgery on my ankle, and just sort of following on from that surgery, which was May 2016, yeah, things just sort of progressed pretty well, and towards the end of 2016 I started setting my sights on Berlin, and you know, just watching out guys like you and seeing what you guys were doing, and you know, Brad Croker and whatnot, and yeah, I guess it just came together, but it was, yeah, the culmination of a lot of years of effort and false starts.
Yeah, we'll get to that Berlin race because I want to talk about that in a bit more detail later on. But although, you know, that PB took quite a few years to come out, you won some pretty significant races in those times, like Canberra Marathon, Hobart, like 3 times, is that correct?
Oh, man, I've got to draw on the memory bank now. Hobart... 2009, I think I won it.
And second in 2010, I've got here. Correct, and then yep. Won it in 2011, and then won again 2015.
That's right, yep. So 15, yeah, 15 got off to a good start and then injured not long after that, yeah.
And then the M7 one in Sydney in 2014. Like, you've cocked up some pretty significant wins on the Australian kind of scene.
Yeah, yeah. Sydney, the M7, I got the win. Sydney was a third place, was the best I did there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So although you weren't breaking through with the massive PB, you were still clocking up a few wins.
Yeah, that's nice. But, you know, in the back of your mind, you're always drawn to whatever it is that's really firing you up. Quite often with many of us, it just happens to be tied to a round number or being just under a round number, whether that be 220 for me and guys like yourself or 3 hours or 4 or 5. There's kind of that little bit of allure and a little bit of a mystique about getting under those round numbers, isn't there, mate?
Oh, tell me about, yeah, coming from the guy who's running 2:20 and 15 seconds.
Yep.
And 30.05 for 10.
Yeah.
I'm all about those round numbers and just missing them. But I guess, do you think there's something in that, though? Like, you've had quite a lot of time at home and dominating on the domestic circuit before you've gone overseas and chased some faster times?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, funnily enough, I'd actually entered Berlin. I think this might have been, it's definitely at least my third time, possibly even my fourth. Funnily enough, I actually clocked up a 2-hour PB in Berlin because I actually made it over there a few years ago, and I was staying with someone, and he, I wasn't going to run. I was injured, but I'd already entered. So he ended up taking my bib and running a 4:19. So I did have a finish next to my name.
Yeah, it's probably not good for race directors trying to get a start in some races with that PB next to your name.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess it's easier to sort of rock up to a domestic race when you've just had, you know, a couple months of good training, but if you really want to target, especially a major where you've got to enter, you know, almost a year out in some cases, it's harder to do. So, like I said, in the middle there was that 2:22 in Fukuoka, and that was one of the races where you don't have to enter quite as far out as a major. And I was just had a couple injuries that stopped me when I was looking at having a crack at sub 2:20 at Gold Coast in the middle of the year. Ran a pretty good, I think 68.18 at at SMH where Coxie got me by a second, got me by a nose.
Oh, right.
And then, yeah, pulled up lame after that, missed Gold Coast, did M7, you know, and that was 224. Had another little niggle, but then got going again and threw my hat in the ring for Fukuoka. But, yeah, like I said, just missed out. But, yeah, like I said, I guess the domestic ones are easy to sort of pull out the hat at any time. But if you, especially if you're doing a major, it's things need to go to plan.
Hmm.
And quite often in this sport, as you know, they don't.
Yeah. Tell me about, I'm just back from Japan and just loved my experience over there. What was Fukuoka like? I can imagine, you know, probably other than Tokyo, or probably, I don't know, like on par with Tokyo, I suppose, with their history. And, yeah, tell me how that goes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Fukuoka, I was just overwhelmed by the crowd support and by the hospitality. You know, I had a guy sort of approached me and basically as I was having dinner one night and sort of, you know, I was the token Aussie in this place and he asked me, you know, what I was doing and I told him, you know, I'm here for the race and he asked me where it started and I said, oh, it starts in this, you know, Ahari Park and he was staying near there. He was a businessman in from another part of Japan and sure enough, 2 Ks into the race, he'd asked my name. He said, oh, I'll see you at this point just as you come out of the park. Yeah. And sure enough, this guy's on the side of the road holding up a placard with
KW really?
On it. And, but, yeah, it works like clockwork over there. It's amazing. We there was no jostling for position. I mean, Fukuoka's a bit smaller than Tokyo, but there was no jostling for position at all because we were lined up and basically each person had a dot to stand on pretty much to start from, you know, whoever was Kibetti, I think, was one of the favourites, right through to whoever was at the back of the pack. And the whole thing operated like clockwork. I mean, I remember there was I think it was about a three-hour cutoff in that race, and I was walking back to the hotel probably 3 hours and 5 minutes after it started, and you would not have guessed there was a race 5 minutes ago finishing up on that road. It was just the traffic was going back and forward. There was no mess. There was no streamers lying around. It was just absolute clockwork. And the hospitality and everything, it was a real pleasure to be a part of.
Yeah, and the process of getting in, Dave, like, because is it sub 2:35 to get a start?
Yeah, I think so with Fukuoka, there's actually two starts. There's the start in the stadium, which is sub 2:27, and then I think it's like sub 2:45 or sub 2:50 to get in the other start in the park, and they join at about the 2K mark. And that was quite an interesting thing too, being, you know, I was kind of at the back end of the pack starting in the stadium, and we did 4 laps before heading out of the stadium, or 3¾ laps, and it gives you an idea of just how fast those guys are running. I mean, I was setting off at about 3:20 or something like that, and obviously the leaders are setting out under 3 minutes, and you'd be heading down the home straight of the 100 meters after 3 laps, and you'd be seeing the guys on the other side of the track already, just in such a short time, opening up such a big gap, which, you know, on a normal road race you wouldn't really get to see because they'd just run out of sight. But because it's around a track, you get a real appreciation for that distance and for just how fast those guys are. It's incredible.
Yeah, and you're not mucking around either, running at 2:20 kind of K or marathon pace.
Yeah, that's right. So it's kind of like, wow, I'm out here busting myself, and these guys are just, wow, they look like they're cruising, going another 25 seconds a K faster.
Yeah. I didn't actually realise about you, mate, but you've actually got you start out with the ultras. You kind of did things differently. Like, you start in the ultra world and come down to the marathon world, Julian was saying today. So I guess what kind of appeal do you get to start with the longer stuff straight out of school, was it, or like, when did you start?
Yeah, it was. It was the end of first year uni that I did my first ultra, and it was probably inspired by a teacher at school. One of my teachers, Annis Mellum, used to go over to Adelaide every year, and Sri Shinmore used to run the Australian 24-hour champs over there. And, you know, I remember this guy was my cross-country coach, and I looked up to him, and, you know, he'd say, oh, yeah, I'm going there every year until I win it. And sure enough, it was a few years after I left school, he did win it. but that was kind of my motivation to get into ultras. I did a few 12-hour races and a few ultra trail runs as well. And then it was after a bit of an injury, and I actually had an ortho sort of say to me, "Oh, your body's just not built for running." And I was in a leg brace for 6 weeks, and that really got to me. And I thought, "Oh, if I can just get back to doing marathon distance, that'll be awesome." And then I did, and the temptation was to sort of go back to doing the longer stuff, but I just kind of got to that distance and really found my niche, you know.
Yeah, and can you remember, like, what kind of times you were banging out? Like, what was your first marathon in, or, like, your 10K PB at age of 20 or something like that, just to give... Because I think you're generally, like, a really hard worker. Like, I hope it doesn't come across as offensive, but I don't think you'd be genetically blessed to be a superstar at 15.
Yeah, right. No, it was... I mean, yes and no. Like, I mean, the cross-country team was the first team I ever made at school. I was in, year five, and I made the cross-country team. But it was just something I noticed back then too, that in the athletics team, for example, where the guys are doing, we're doing 800s and 1500s, I'd be just behind some guys. And then when we'd step up to cross country, which in those years of lower primary and junior high school were probably between 3 and 5 Ks, I'm starting to pick off those guys, and I just sort of started to realise, oh, the longer it gets, the more competitive I am. But, I was never setting the world on fire at school or anything like that. I never sort of went to a state or anything like that. I guess when I was sort of in my early 20s, I remember joining Striders in 2003, and I was punching out, I think, when I first joined, it was a bit over 35s for the 10K.
Yeah.
And then I think my first marathon was 2003 at Sydney, and I did a 2:35 there.
Yeah. It's pretty good progression, though, isn't it? Like from 2:35 down to 2:17.
Yeah, well, there was a long while there where, when I first did join Striders, there was Darren Benson and Chris Truscott were the guys who'd sort of been around for a while, and they were sort of spanking me every month at the 10Ks. And I think Chris had got under the 2:30 marathon mark at Berlin 1 year. Darren Benson never got there, and I kind of thought, oh, well, if these guys are spanking me and they're one of them's just getting under and the other one hasn't, I think, oh, that's probably out of my league. And so it took me a fair while to get under that mark. It was 2007 before I finally did. And then, of course, you think, okay, well, is that the limit? Have I got to as good as I can get? And then I ran a few more 2:30s and, got down to the 2:27s. I got a 2:27 at Canberra 1 year, and then I thought, 2:25's not too far away. Maybe I can get a sub 2:25. And, you just keep chipping away, I guess.
It's interesting, though, because it's almost the opposite. Like, coming from a track background myself, and you step up to the marathon and you might have some, there's so many guys, I guess, who have ran 65, 66, 67 for half marathon that debut and think they're just going to run under 2:20 first up. I was exactly that guy, but then you've kind of come from the opposite and just like chopped it down slowly.
Well I think I think there's different perceptions of it coming from the other end too. I guess the other thing was, having done a few ultras, I kind of I viewed the marathon as not such a long race. And with that in mind, I guess I having blown up in ultras where, you're doing a 100K race, you might blow up at 60 and you've still got a marathon to run, you kind of weren't as fearful of the blowing up, and you had a better appreciation of pace, which I guess is one thing that I've always been relatively good at, is picking my pace. And I hope I'm not shooting myself in the foot with Tokyo coming up next week. But I think the other thing is that a lot of the faster guys have a lot of pressure that I think I don't have. For example, going into Berlin, I was completely running my own race. I mean, you and I had sort of had some conversations about, oh, we might run together if we're going around that sort of 16.5, 5K mark. But at the end of the day, it was kind of like, yep, I know how I'm feeling and I'm running my own race, whereas some faster guys might be under pressure of, well, not only am I running for my time, but I'm running with the time to get into the Commonwealth Games in mind too, and I'm therefore thinking that I've got to set a time faster than some other guys in some other races, which is why you see a lot of guys really having to go for perhaps a little bit more than they're worth. And so I guess, yeah, I was lucky just being, a grade further down than some of those guys that didn't have that to worry about.
Yeah, but I guess you're there now, though. Like, you're in the, good qualifier last year. And, like, is that going forward something you're aspiring to, like making the Australian stuff, or are you going to jump back to the ultras, or, like, all of a sudden your name's in the hat?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me, I don't really think it is. You've got you've four guys under 215 now, with Thomas Decanto joining that list just recently at Fukuoka, and that's still out of my league at the current time. So I kind of I'm not viewing. I mean, especially maybe world champs next year. You never know. Some of those guys might not throw their hat in the ring. But when I go out for, when I head out at Tokyo next weekend, I'll be heading out trying to guesstimate what I'm capable of, not saying, okay, Tom ran 2:14:57, I'm going to try and beat that, because I certainly would be shooting myself in the foot if I went out at that pace,
And it adds that pressure that we're kind of talking about before, that some guys have leading into marathons.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably not a good way to run, having that kind of pressure on top of you, like running free and just doing what you want out there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I guess they've got their rewards that they're chasing, but for me the rewards are just personal.
Yeah, I guess though with that Doha team, like if our top three guys don't want to go, there's certainly an opportunity there.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't knock it back, yeah.
That's, I've talked about it with Julian before, because he's kind of a couple of names down the list from you. But, I said to him kind of, you never know, three guys don't want to go, two guys get injured, all of a sudden you've got an Australian singlet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, let's go back to that day in Berlin then. So he kind of spoke about how we'd had conversations about possibly running, 16:35 Ks and being in that same group. And I know I kind of did that for a few K, but you were long gone pretty quick and no one saw you ever again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess I had so I actually had on my wristband my times printed out and laminated, and I was sort of hopeful of 2:18:30. That's what I had on the wristband. But I was ready to see how things panned out, especially as we rocked up to the start on the morning and it was raining, which was a little bit unforeseen.
Just to interrupt though, Dave, where'd that 2:18:30 come from? Like, did you do something in training that you thought that might have been the time, or where'd you pull that from?
Yeah, I guess one of my main predictors was I have a little 32K long run that I do. It's up at North Head near Manly, and I try and do that at basically as fast as I can. I did that before Berlin, just under 2:20 pace, and it was a little bit hillier than Berlin. I knew the day was quite a bit warmer, and there was a little bit of wind around, and just based on the way I was feeling, I kind of figured that if all was going well, that 2:18:30 might be a realistic goal. And also that's going out at 69:15 for the first half, which would give me a little bit of a buffer, but not a silly buffer. I've never been one to say, put time in the bank.
Yeah.
But it was just, to me, it seemed like that little bit of allowed for a slight fade without being ridiculous.
Yeah. So then things start rolling, like you were kind of in a pretty elite pack there and well ahead of Julian and I and the elite females. And was it just one of those days where you felt good early and just couldn't believe what was happening?
Yeah, it was funny. I sort of there was this, maybe I felt a bit too good too early. A mate of mine, I was staying at an Airbnb with a few friends, and one of them was a bit of a photographer and snapped a photo of me really enjoying myself at about 4Ks in. And then I got to 5Ks and I was 11 seconds down on the splits for 2:18:30. And I sort of realised, oh, okay, maybe I've really got to sort of get to work here. And so my next 5K split was, you know, it was a little bit faster, and I started eating into that 11-second deficit. I think I was 8 seconds down after 10, and then by 15 I'd chewed up a bit more. I was 2 seconds down, so pretty much on it after to 15Ks. And then funnily enough, I got passed by this Swiss guy, and I didn't realise it at the time, but he'd actually fallen over at the start, which was why he was behind me to start with. But he was dragging a bit of a chain through there, a bit of a train through, sorry, and so I kind of jumped on that, and that was at about 17Ks, and so I was sort of pretty lucky in a way. I spent a little bit of time in no man's land, sort of jumping from group to group as I was speeding up until about 17Ks. But when he came along with the, I think it was three or four guys he was dragging along, I sort of tacked onto there, and effectively I was with him until around about 30Ks. So that's, as you know, I know you sort of spent a bit of time in no man's land in your recent run,
yeah.
And you know just how much of a difference it makes when you have someone to work with, and often I'd try and do a little bit of turn at the front, but he was well and truly stronger. And
well, he's a 2:12 guy, isn't he? He went to the Olympics and stuff. I know the guy talking about has the glasses.
Yeah, he did. And again, that was something I didn't realise at the time. But
probably good not to know that.
One thing I did realise was that he was the stronger of the two of us. And so he dragged me through, and I remember getting to to halfway in 69.10, so that was 5 seconds up on that 69.15 split I was talking about. And I actually thought, I remembered that the way I felt at the half marathon split at that long run I did in North Head. And I remember, and it's a bit of a mind game, and I'm just talking myself into it, and I'm saying I'm pretty sure I feel a lot more comfortable now than I did that day. And I started to think, oh, well, maybe, you know, a negative split could be on the cards here. But of course, you know, with a half marathon left to run, I also said, look, you've got to not get carried away with it. And I just stuck on Christian's heels for a little bit longer. And then things, you know, started getting a bit tough, sort of between 25 and 30Ks. We're still moving at the same pace, or even increasing the pace until that point. But at 30Ks, we actually came upon a group at the same time as we hit a drink station, and him being stronger, he just grabbed his drink, bolted around them, and I was sort of caught napping a little bit, I guess, and he put about 10 metres onto me just as we were crossing that timing mat, and I sort of had a bit of a decision to make then, and I said, I could catch him, but at what cost? And that's the point that I let him go, and again got into to no man's land, and you know that's part of it. And so from 30Ks, it sort of, the ball game changed a little bit, and it was a little bit more of a, okay, I'm trying to hang on here. But the pace still kept on going up until about 35. Then another guy from Chicago passed, and it was that point where I really started to feel like, oh, okay, the pace has taken its toll a little bit. And again, I sort of had this choice of, am I going to try and stick with this guy, or am I going, because I'm still up on my goal time, am I going to, not push it quite so hard? And I let him go, and, I dropped. It still wasn't my slowest. My slowest, 5K section of the race actually remained the first 5K. But 35 to 40 was pretty close. It was about 2 seconds off. But then once I hit that 40K mark, it just, I guess that strategy paid dividends of just just easing off ever so slightly between 35 and 40. Or not even easing off, but just sort of not spending my remaining bickies too soon. And once I got to 40, I could sort of smell home. And, you know, you've got that Brandenburg Gate looming, which you can see for the last sort of K, really.
Yeah.
And you can sort of sniff the finish from there, as you know.
Yeah, once you start taking those turns, like just the left turn after left turn, and, yeah, yep. You just know you're getting home pretty quick from there.
Yeah, that's right. Well, if any of the listeners, I mean, I was very familiar with it just from watching over and over again the 2016 race where Bekele turned it on against Kipsang.
Yeah.
So anyone listening, if you haven't seen that race, go on Google or go on to YouTube and look for the 2016 Berlin Marathon. Fast forward till about the 35K mark, and it's an absolute ding-dong battle between Bekele and Kipsang. That's amazing.
I think that's a good point for anyone, like, coming up running a marathon, though. Like, if the race is available on YouTube, like, watch the footage and have a look at the course, and because there's no way you're going to be able to run the 42K in Berlin unless you're there beforehand and the streets are going to be busy. And, yeah, I think that's a good thing to study courses in that way.
Yeah, precisely. Just sort of – and courses and course maps as well, you know, and just getting your head around where you can expect the drink stations and what side of the road and things like that. Because I remember going back a few years, I did the Paris Marathon, and as runners do, I'm taking the shortest line around a bend, not realizing that I saw the drink station on the other side of the bend, but I was expecting there to be drinks on, you know, on the tangent side as well. And when I realized that the drink station on the other side of the road had ended and there wasn't any on my side, I actually lost a bit of time just darting across because I wasn't going to miss a drink station. Mm. So, yeah, it just comes down to preparation. I guess it's like all the other elements of preparation, making sure your nutrition's right and making sure everything with your race kit's right. Just knowing the course and things like that is really imperative too.
Yeah, let's get to nutrition, because what you do on race day is a bit different than what the majority of people do, barley sugars.
Yeah, so I don't know how I got onto that. I'm actually trying something new at Tokyo. I'm trying the Cliff Shot blocks, so I'll keep you posted on how that goes.
Yep.
But barley sugars, I've kind of liked them because you can just sort of whack four or five in your pocket. You don't have to worry about taping them to a drink bottle or whatever. And with my eyesight, you know, finding a drink bottle in amongst all of them is like finding a needle in the haystack sometimes. So I just generally rely on water. But with barley sugars, you can pop one in your mouth. I don't bite down on it. I'll just let it slowly dissolve under my tongue, really. And I feel like I've got basically a drip, a constant energy flow going through the whole time, and I'm never sort of wanting for energy, really. So they have served me really well. But a few words with the nutritionist have said maybe I could be better served by the shot block. So I'll see how I go on that front.
Yeah. So how many grams of sugar is in a barley sugar though? Like, you're going in pretty light carb loading, really. Well, during the race.
Yeah, can't tell you how many grams, but yeah, I guess there's not a lot of substance to them. So I guess perhaps it was more psychological than anything, just that feeling of having something there the whole time.
Yeah, well, I guess you must be a pretty good fat burner though, like when you're running at that pace.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because it's I've just done some stuff with Monash Uni before I ran this marathon over in Japan, and they were kind of saying, you know, 90 grams or 60, 70 grams per hour at least. And, you'd be way less than that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it kind of goes to your training a bit, and I want to maybe spend the next couple of minutes there, because obviously you're a high mileage guy, and sometimes when I check Strava, like if I haven't checked Strava for 24 hours, I've got to do a bit of a second take, because there might be four runs from you from that day, and it's not rare to check Strava and you've done a, you know, 35, 40K day pretty easy.
Yeah, pretty much. I sort of, just basically I've always sort of found that. And it's funny because a lot of people actually sort of say, oh, you know, you're crazy, you're asking for injuries. But I've kind of found the opposite. And I kind of regarded my approach to Berlin as being pretty conservative in the sense that I know my body can handle the mileage, but what tends to break me is the speed stuff. So I don't do a lot of track stuff at all. And when I do, I'm really, really careful with how I approach it, and just sort of add it into the program minimally. And if I notice a niggle, that's the first thing to drop off. If I have a niggle, I might be able to get through it with high mileage, but not with that intensity. So, yep, I've always been a pretty high mileage guy, and over the past year, I've seemed to maintain it really well without any too many niggles at all. And just since Berlin, when I sort of got that monkey off my back, I have done a fair bit more faster stuff since then. Staying away from the track a fair bit, but a few rep sessions down at Barangaroo and a bit of a bit of faster stuff on the treadmill as well.
Yeah, I've seen that. And Brad actually wanted me to ask you that. Like, what's the you kind of get in there for 10K tempos at 3 minute K pace. Like, you seem to be going pretty fast on the treadmill. So why are you doing that on treadmills and not out in the road, I guess?
Well, yeah, I guess this time of year, I guess it's just the weather is one factor.
Yep.
And it can be sort of quite demoralizing for us training for a Japanese marathon through the summer when you might be fitter than you have been previously, but your times aren't matching it.
Yeah.
So being a fairly static environment inside on the treadmill, you're avoiding that aspect. And I guess also that, you're running times on the treadmill that don't faster than what you can do on the road. And there's kind of a bit of a psychological element to it too. You know, I broke 30 minutes on the treadmill a couple of times and, I could never do that on the road or the track, as you know, from our race down in Steigen. But yeah, I don't know. I get a little bit of a boost out of it, and I think it helps with the cadence too. Your leg turnover really is forced, and you're forced to maintain it as the belt dictates.
Yeah, and no niggles from like the kind of pounding on the treadmill in the one spot.
No, I find sometimes the hammies can feel a little bit tender, but that's nothing that a good good session on the roller and a few stretches doesn't take care of.
Yep, and I read on Runner's Tribe, before Berlin, you ran 7,000 Ks in 9 months, which pretty much gives you an average of 200K a week. Pretty impressive stuff. And, like, do you put that down to the massive improvement as well, just that massive base you built?
Yeah, definitely. And I've always said, base before pace. And definitely, yeah, it's being able to do that and maintain the consistency. And I sort of train a few people who are starting to creep up in their mileage too, but I ensure that that's the way they do it. They creep up and, over the years, I've sort of built to this over the years. I've been running that long, I guess, that, you just don't jump into stuff like that overnight. It's got to be a very, very gradual build-up. And you've got to be really responsive to things that are happening with your body and ensure that you've got the people around to work on those issues, whether they're podiatrists or physios or whoever, yeah.
Yeah, and do you have like a mentor or a coach or someone who's influenced this kind of training philosophy?
No, I guess I've kind of always sort of done my own thing. And part of that is that because I don't drive, and that's related to my eyesight, I've found that coaching is something that I kind of feel, it's sort of difficult to stick to a program because so often I'm logging up so many miles in the commute. That's how I get around, that if I had a session planned, it might be erased by just my need to be at a certain place that day and needing to run there. And so, yeah, for that reason, I guess coaching's never really worked for me. But, I've got a few people around that even if they haven't been running quite as long as me, we bounce ideas off each other and ensure that we're neither of us are doing anything silly.
Yeah, and you mentioned that 32K kind of almost time trial over the hilly course at in Sydney there, but have you got anything else that's maybe a key session and a good indicator before a marathon that kind of gives you a bit of confidence and tells you where you're at?
Yeah, well, just, I mean, I'm a pretty simple man. I have a, you know, 10K, just did 10Ks down at Parramatta Park. And, you know, I ran that a bit faster on Friday than I had in the previous months. So, that's, you know, that was a confidence boosting session as well. But yeah, not in terms of reps or anything like that. Just, but I think, you know, the closer that you can get to race distance, the more reliable an indicator it is. So the obviously the 32 is a pretty reliable indicator. I mean, you can't fake a good session over that distance. And the 10K is, you know, that's usually if you're running well over 10, you're running well over a marathon as well. So so that's a pretty good indicator as well.
Yeah, and is there a reason you stop at 32? Like, is that close enough to the fire without getting burnt, or like just that old 20-mile kind of number?
Yeah, well, partly that, I guess. Partly the course. It's you know, it's a looped course, and seven loops is that. And you know, if I was to add another one, I'd be up over 35, which is starting to push the envelope a bit if you're really going to hammer it. So yeah, I think that's kind of a good distance. But you definitely, my advice is you definitely want to try running at marathon pace for definitely more than a half marathon.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hey, let's get to the Run Beyond project, because you're doing some pretty amazing things there. Do you want to maybe explain to the listeners exactly what it is if they haven't heard of it already?
Yeah, sure. So the Run Beyond project's a project that I initiated back in 2015. Just at my school. I teach at Chester Hill High School out in Sydney Southwest, and it's a project that uses running as a way to teach life skills to students in need, to high school students in need, and we focus on goal setting, commitment and resilience, and we do that with a focus on a goal race. So the kids work towards a goal race and developing themselves, obviously, physically to prepare themselves for that. And we go through a curriculum focusing on those key skills at the same time. And there's a big focus on how these skills can help them, A, to get to their goal race, but B, more importantly, beyond running. And we always sort of bring in that word and say, okay, you know, how can you've learned about goal setting to set some goals for your race. How can you use these goal-setting skills in your life beyond running? And, okay, you've committed to this goal race. How can you demonstrate commitment in your life beyond running? And the same with resilience. And, so we're starting to get into a few more schools now, and we're always on the lookout for more. So if there's any teachers out there in schools with kids in need, make sure you get in touch. And we're providing this. We're a charity, so it's a free program for kids, and they get a great deal out of it, and they're welcomed into this wonderful running community, and that's a great thing too. You know, a lot of kids don't realize that this exists out there, and it's really fantastic when kids of their own volition who've been through this program, you'll see them at a park run on a Saturday morning, you know, because so many kids in schools like this will rock up on a Sunday, rock up on a Monday to school, and you'll say, oh, what was your weekend like? What did you do? Oh, you know, watch TV, or, you know. So it sort of expands their world in lots of different ways.
And just that building relationships as well. Like you had the team down there at the Hobart Marathon Festival this year, and it just seems like a good group of guys and girls, and a trip away, and kind of a, you know, one, it's almost like a once in a lifetime opportunity for people like this to be involved in that program. And they just had massive smiles on their face the whole weekend when I spotted them, and it must have been very rewarding for you to see that kind of outcome, I guess, on race day.
Yeah, it is, you know, and rewarding for the kids to see their own progress, you know, and to see the way they've come along, and to meet a whole bunch of interesting people who are kind of outside their normal world, and so it's it is something. It's really special. Yeah, definitely.
We ran together for pretty much that whole half marathon that day, and the course was out and back, and just the looks that the kids give you when you were coming back and they were going out, it's almost like they're seeing their hero do his work in the flesh. Like, yeah, you could really tell they look up to you and really wanted you to do well as much as them going the opposite way.
Yeah, well, you know, when you I guess that was the thing too. That was part of the reason I sort of implemented it too. It's like I've got this passion, and that I think that sharing this passion that, you know, all of us, probably all of the listeners have too, for what they're doing in the running community, I think it's a great thing to be able to share that. And I just think of how much that running's given me, and I think if I can give the kids a bit of an insight into, you know, what they can get out of it, then that's an awesome thing too.
So how's this all fit in, mate? Like, the listeners might be sitting back thinking, you know, Dave runs anywhere between 200 and 250k a week, he's a teacher, he's Run Beyond project director, like, he's commuting everywhere, running from spot to spot. Like, where do you find the time to do this?
Yeah, well, I guess I kind of find the commuting is a kind of killing two birds with one stone kind of thing. I think, you know, I don't need to spend all that time in the car getting to and from work. It's getting my training needs and getting me from A to B in one go. So that's probably, you know, it was sort of quite devastating, I guess, as a 16-year-old when you realise you can't get your licence. But that's an example of, the other side of the coin, just looking at the other side of the coin. And I guess as for the Run Beyond project, well, I'm really lucky that, you know, a lot of people in the running community have come on board, and we've got a great team of people helping out, and it's definitely not just me running this thing. We've got some wonderful people all around doing their part, and some wonderful teachers in schools implementing it. And like I said, always looking for more, so get in touch.
Yeah, hopefully there's plenty of school teachers that are runners out there, so hopefully some people hear this and can make a bit of contact. Website or what, email, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, find us on Facebook and get in touch via there, or Insta, or our website.
Yeah, cool. Now, let's finish off with Tokyo this weekend. I don't want to jinx you, and it's always a bit of a worry when you get people on before their actual race, but feel free to not answer this question.
I was a bit nervous, when you asked me.
I think it's always better before than after, because it gives the listeners a bit of, they can listen to this on Tuesday or Wednesday and then really play at home and watch your splits and, see how it pans out in real life. It's a bit more like reality running TV kind of radio show thing. So have we got any time in the thoughts, or what are you thinking?
Okay, yeah, well, so 2:17:57, as you mentioned, is the PB currently, and I ran that with a second half split of 68:47. I just actually realised today, doing a bit of research of my own, that Moose actually was only 1 second different in his second half at Berlin. So
don't tell him that. He's got a big enough head already, Moosey. Yeah, we don't want to pump him up too much. But I did read, it's a bit off topic and I don't want to cut you off, but yeah, I read on Runner's Tribe that Brad Croker, the other host, actually inspired you towards that Berlin run.
Yeah, definitely. When he tore me apart in the second half of Canberra, that certainly wasn't a negative split that day. Yeah. We were pretty much together at halfway in Canberra in April, and he went on to run 2:24 and a half or something like that, and I was about 2:27 and a half, I'd seen that, I'd seen in the Canberra Times the days before that he was one of the favourites for Canberra, and it was said that he was doing that with a view of it being a stepping stone to Berlin, which was pretty much what I was doing too. And so I thought, oh geez, if I'm 3 minutes behind him in April, then I've got to pull my finger out. So he definitely did inspire me. Yeah.
So back to this negative split though. So you're thinking that's the way it's going to happen in Tokyo again?
Not necessarily, but my thought process is that if I ran 68:47 in the second half at Berlin and I'm chasing a PB, then it seems sensible to go out at faster than 68:47 pace. And okay, so I'm sort of thinking, well, you know, if I go out at 68 and a half, that's on track for a 2:17. And that seems to me like it might be possible, but I kind of think if I go out at 68 flat at 216 pace, to me that seems like ridiculously fast. So I kind of, I'm feeling like there's a really small window between the pace I need to sort of get a, you know, a PB and the pace at which I'm really sort of throwing myself into the fire. So, I think I might try for around about 68 and a half at halfway. So try for about 217. That's kind of what I'm thinking at the moment.
And will a bit depend on where the packs are as well? Like, I know Tokyo's deep at, you know, 2.5, 2.6 kind of pace, but is there much around kind of 2.17, 2.16?
Well, I mean, it kind of varies from year to year, so that might influence it slightly where I'm at. But I kind of would like to end up, you know, within sort of 10 seconds either side of that, I guess, hopefully. These things are hard to say, of course. The weather forecast looking relatively favourable at the moment. But, yeah, from my experience racing in – I've done Fukuoka twice – the Japanese, to put some numbers on it, twice in Fukuoka I got to halfway in around about 95/100th position, and both times I ran a slight positive split, faded maybe 30-40 seconds or so, and both times I ended up in about 35th position.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping that the same thing happens, you know, and that there's a few sort of kamikaze runners out there, because that's certainly good for motivation in the second half if you can be picking off people, being the hunter rather than hunted, I guess.
Yeah.
But I guess that's in the lap of the gods.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of jealous that you're going to Japan. Like, it's beautiful country, and, wish you all the best over there.
Thanks, mate. I'm just hoping it's not as windy as it was for you a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Hopefully. I don't think Brad's forecast for Lake Biwa is looking much better. I think he's got 30K wins on the cards as well this far out, but hopefully a bit can change there. What are they expecting? Have you looked ahead?
Yeah, it looks like single-digit temperatures. The wind speed looks to be, the prediction is around about, I think it's 6 or 9 Ks now, last time I saw it, with gusts of up to 22. So that's kind of a bit of a difference between the average wind speed and your gust speed. Yeah. So hopefully
in the city they'll have a bit of cover. Yeah. Like, do they do a loop for Tokyo or out and back? I haven't really looked at it much in the past.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of an arc, really, with a few out and backs in it. So yeah. you're kind of going all sorts of directions. So if there is a little bit of a wind, you're going to catch a tailwind at some stage and a headwind at some stage and a crosswind at some stage. So
yeah, it all balances out, hopefully, for you on race day.
Fingers crossed.
Rightio, Dave. All the listeners have got their fingers crossed as well. I've got my fingers crossed. And, all the best. And thanks for coming on and sharing some stories with us. And, just inspiring us. I really recommend that the listeners get over to your Strava account and just look at the kind of miles you're putting in, because it blows my mind, and I reckon it will a lot of people as well.
Thanks very much for having me, Brady. It's been awesome.
No worries, mate. Cheers again for your time.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Dave.
as a young man. Doesn't matter if you're white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if